नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय यथा यथा भगवतो भक्त्यपरमयादिभि नृपाश्चैद्यादया सत्म्यां हरिष्ठाश्चिन्तया ययुः.
By devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to His. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same result. Purport by His Divine Grace, H.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, in connection with Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatan Goswami, it is explained that a devotee should externally execute his routine devotional service in a regular way, but should always inwardly think of the particular mellow in which he is attracted to the service of the Lord. This constant thought of the Lord makes the devotee eligible to return home back to Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Tyaktva deham punara janma naiti mam eti. After giving up his body, a devotee does not again receive a material body, but goes back to Godhead and receives a spiritual body resembling those of the Lord's eternal associates whose activities he followed. However, the devotee likes to serve the Lord. He may constantly think of the Lord's associates, the cowherd boys, the gopis, the Lord's father and mother, his servants, and the trees, land, animals, plants, and water in the Lord's abode. Because of constantly thinking of these features, one acquires a transcendental position. Kings like Shishupal, Dantavakra, Kamsa, Pondraka, Narakasura, and Salva were all similarly delivered. This is confirmed by Madhvacharya. Pondrake narake chaiva, salve kamse charukmini, avishtastu hadera bhaktas, tad bhaktya harim apire. Pondraka, Narakasura, Salva, and Kamsa were all inimical toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because all these kings constantly thought of him, they achieve the same liberation, Sarupya Mukti. The Jnana Bhakta, the devotee who follows the path of Jnana, also attains the same destination. Even if the enemies of the Lord achieve salvation by constantly thinking about the Lord, what is to be said of pure devotees who always engage in the Lord's service and would think of nothing but the Lord in every activity? Translation: by devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to His. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Shishupal, Dantavakra, and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same result. Om Agyantimirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Srila Narada Muni is here describing to Maharaj Yudhisthira the power of the divine remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prahlad Maharaj attained the perfectional stage of bhakti through the process of devotion called smaranam, or constantly remembering the Lord. Indeed, of all the Vedic injunctions, to always remember Krishna is the most important. Narada Muni is here explaining that Krishna's divine remembrance is absolute, and it is so powerful that even the demons who are envious of Krishna, who are fearful of Krishna, they also attained salvation by always remembering Krishna. Therefore, when we propagate the Krishna consciousness movement, any way the name of Krishna is remembered by the people in general, that is the greatest benefit in life for them. Sometimes Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when there would be newspaper articles about the Krishna consciousness movement, he would simply take the paper and he would not even read the article. He would just count how many times the name Krishna appeared. One time there were two articles that came out in the same day. One was written by a very sympathetic journalist and one by a very, very antagonistic journalist. So they gave both of the articles to our Param Guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he simply went through each line, counting how many times the name Krishna appeared. And he said, "This article is far better." And he pointed to the article that had nothing but bad things to say about the devotees. It was simply completely out of context, completely untrue, and critical, even blasphemous. And the other article was quite positive. But in the negative article, every line, there were accusations against Krishna and his devotees, and the name Krishna appeared several times on each line. And in the good article, it described many activities, but the name Krishna only appeared once or twice in the whole article. So he said, whoever reads these articles, as far as the context of what is said, they will remember today and tomorrow they will forget. People do not remember what they read in the papers for very long. So it is not very important. But as they read, every time they hear the name Krishna, they get eternal benefit. They get eternal credits in their spiritual account, and they become that much more purified. So therefore, this negative article is actually more beneficial because people will get so much purified because dozens and dozens of times they will come across the name Krishna and chant within their mind. And he used to say that when we chant in the streets or when we are wearing our robes, even those people who dislike us, who ridicule us, they think of Krishna. Oh, those Hare Krishnas, those foolish Hare Krishnas. Look, there's a Hare Krishna. Even if they say it negative, the fact that they remember the name Krishna or say the name Krishna means that they benefit. They become purified. Perhaps more than anything they have done in their entire life. An atheistic person who says those blankety-blank Hare Krishnas, that's probably the only thing spiritual he's done in his life, and because he's done that, he'll get a human birth. And we read about these demons, asuras, such as Kamsa, how he was always remembering Krishna.
It is said you become like what you associate with. You take on the qualities of that which you associate with. Narada Muni explains that there is a particular type of drone that captures the caterpillar and puts the caterpillar in his nest. And the caterpillar cannot get out of the nest. He's trapped. And he knows that the drone is going to come and eat him at any moment. And he sees the drone, and he's constantly thinking in terrible fear, when will the drone come to eat me? And because he lives his life in constant, intense remembrance of the drone, and when he dies being eaten by the drone, he's immersed in thought of this drone. It is explained that that caterpillar takes his next birth as a drone. So similarly, Kamsa, on the evening of the wedding of his sister Devaki and Vasudev, a very thunderous voice in the sky announced that, Kamsa, you are a great fool. You are taking such good care of your sister, escorting her on your fine chariot to her new residence, not knowing that the eighth child of this sister will kill you. At that time, Kamsa, he was ready to kill his own sister to spare his life. He was so much attached to the bodily conception. He was so much afraid of this eighth child that just to not take any chances that it may be another child, he killed six innocent infant children who were born of Devaki. Of course, the seventh was transferred to the womb of Rohini in Braja. That was Sri Balaramji. And the eighth son, he found out, was Lord Sri Krishna. Kamsa, 24 hours a day, like the caterpillar, fearing the drone, was thinking, when will Krishna come to kill me? And one after another, he was sending powerful demons to Vrindavan and Gokul. He sent Putana. He sent Sankatasura. He sent Trinavarta, Aghasura, Vatsasura, Vyomasura, Aristasura, Keshi. He sent demon after demon after demon. And each one he would get the news that that demon was killed by this child, Gopal. Similarly, Shishupal. Shishupal was born. He had four arms. And a prophet, a Brahmin astrologer, came and explained to Shishupal's mother that this child, when his eyes rest upon that person who will be the cause of his death, two of his arms will fall. And the mother was so much bereaved. My dear Krishna, please, how can you kill your own cousin? Be merciful upon him. Grant me this benediction. And Krishna, he said, I will give you a benediction. That this child will be so envious of me that throughout his life he will have nothing to say except bad things about me. I will tolerate up to 100 blasphemies in a row. But if he goes beyond 100 without break, then I will have to kill him. But the first sound vibration out of Shishupal's mouth was blasphemy of Krishna. And Krishna, at every step, Whenever Shishupal made an arrangement with his friend, Shishupal was supposed to marry Rukmini. Can you imagine this? Shishupal, his worst enemy, his most hated obsession in life was Krishna. And every time Krishna was successful in anything, his envy grew like fire. Just when Rukma was about to hand the hand of Rukmini into the hand of Shishupal, Krishna drove up in his chariot, he grabbed Rukmini, he took her on the chariot and drove away. And Shishupal was thinking, my God, Krishna has, he didn't say my God, he said, look at what Krishna has done. Because Krishna wasn't his God. And that just increased his envy by millionfolds. It was like millions of gallons of kerosene falling on a forest fire. It just caused his envy to intolerably burn. And he sent Rukma and others to attack Krishna. But Krishna, of course, he defeated everybody. And Shishupal was helpless. He could not do anything. So in this way, every day of his life was simply a horrible, miserable affair of that fire of envy growing bigger, bigger, bigger. And then Maharaj Yudhisthira, at one point, he was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. First, he had to send his brothers to every kingdom and every village on the earth. And every king on earth had to accept that they were the servant of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And if they didn't accept, they had to fight battle. Of course, we know every king on earth accepted except Jarasandha. And finally, Bhima, Arjuna, and Krishna had to meet Jarasandha, and Bhima killed him by tearing him apart. And then Yudhisthira Maharaj was allowed, according to the Vedic rites, to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. The greatest sacrifice that only the most opulent king who has reign over the entire planet, only such a person can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. It is the greatest of all sacrifices. Now, the most important part of the sacrifice is the king is supposed to choose the most glorified, glorious, and exalted man in the entire earth to worship before the sacrifice begins. So, of course, all great kings, all great princes, all Brahmins, they were all present. And, of course, Maharaj Yudhisthira chose Lord Krishna. And when Shishupal saw that Krishna was about to get the ultimate glorification, this was just so intolerable. He could not believe it. He just started, in this whole assembly of great souls, he started screaming at the top of his lungs all the most horrible insults of Krishna. He couldn't, great souls like Bhishma and Arjuna, great souls like Drona, they are present here, and you chose Krishna? And then he went on and on and on with the bad qualities of Krishna. And he was so intoxicated by envy that he forgot to even count his blasphemies. But Krishna was counting. Meanwhile, Bhima, Arjuna, they were picking up their clubs, bows and arrows. They wanted to kill this rascal. But Krishna said, no, no, you cannot kill him. You just leave him. And he went on, and everybody in the assembly was trembling, holding their ears. They couldn't tolerate what he was saying, but Krishna would not allow anyone to raise a finger to touch him. But Krishna was counting. 98, 99, 100, 101. Then he took his Sudarshan Chakra and he sliced the head of Shishupal from his body.
And right before everyone, the spirit soul of Shishupal came out of the trunk of his dead body and entered into the beautiful effulgent body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. And everyone knew that means he attained liberation. So Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking Narada Muni, how is it possible Shishupal attained liberation? And Narada Muni is explaining, this is the power of thinking of Krishna. Anybody who always thinks of Krishna will attain the supreme destination. That is the beauty of the name of Krishna. That is the beauty of the form of Krishna, that it is completely transcendental. And however you approach it, you become transcendentalized. So here Prabhupada is explaining that if such demons as Kamsa and Shishupal attained the liberated platform by always thinking of Krishna, what to speak of those devotees who sincerely try to please the Lord and chant his holy name to glorify him and dedicate their lives to strive to surrender to him? How fortunate they are. So somehow or other, Rupa Goswami explained, we must always remember Krishna. And somehow or other, the ultimate welfare work is to help others remember Krishna. Because that is factually the only business of the devotees in this world. Simply to help the conditioned souls, the neophyte devotees, to help all living beings remember the goal of life. Manmana bhava mad bhakto mad yajim nam namaskuru mam evaishasi satyam te pratijani priyosh. Krishna explains the qualifications required to attain to his eternal abode. Always think of me. That is the first qualification. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. The essence of Bhagavad Gita is to always think of Krishna. Antakali chamame vasmanan maktva kalevaram. Krishna says, one who remembers me at the time of death, he attains my supreme abode without fail. We can only remember Krishna at the time of death when we strive with an honest and earnest heart to remember him during our life. By hearing his glories, by worshiping his beautiful form, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, by associating with his devotees, and by chanting his holy names, by taking his prasad. Through this simple process, we could keep our mind constantly fixed on Krishna. There is no greater gift that anyone can offer you than that person who comes to remind you of Krishna. If someone comes and gives you 1,000,000 rupees, 1 crore of rupees, that gift is limited and temporary. It will only last for some time and then it will be finished. But if someone comes to give you the gift of reminding you of Krishna, that gift is infinitely more valuable than any wealth of this world. And its effect will be eternal. So therefore, a real friend is someone who helps remind us of Krishna in good fortune and in bad fortune.
Sometimes when we're in a great crisis and our life is full of turbulence, the best friend is he who comes and reminds you how to take shelter of Krishna in that situation and be pacified of your suffering. But at the same time, one who is in good fortune and is infatuated by the ease of his life in such prosperity, the best friend will warn you how it is all temporary, how it is all a source ultimately of misery, so you better remember Krishna. Or he will tell you, yes, this is good fortune, temporary good fortune, but it is all by the mercy of Krishna. So in good or bad fortune, Narottam Das Thakur says, my dear Lord Krishna, I have nothing more than you. I have seen and considered this whole world. And besides you, Krishna, there is nothing that can save me. You are the only source of good fortune and you are the master of this world. Please instruct me as to my true goal and resting place. One who teaches us how to pray like this, to always remember the Lord, he is our real friend, and we should take shelter of such persons. And we should take advantage of the great wealth, the great fortune they are giving us. And then it is guaranteed, if we simply do this alone, that we will attain the eternal abode of the Lord. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes. Is what? Working without desire for fruits is the mode of goodness. Working for Krishna is transcendental. Yes?
What is working for Krishna is attached to the fruits, expecting the fruits. Is that also transcendental?
If he's attached to the fruits to give them to Krishna, that is, it is not purely transcendental, but it is the path of bhakti. By practicing on that platform gradually, he will not become attached to the fruits. He will simply be attached to pleasing Krishna. Krishna needs our surrender. He does not need, but he wants our surrender. Why does he want? Because only when we surrender can we enjoy his divine lila. So he wants it for his pleasure as well as for our pleasure. No one is a pure devotee when they first come. Everyone has their material motives, everyone has their attachments. But by dovetailing those motivations, dovetailing those attachments, in the service of Krishna, gradually we become purified of those motivations. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Krishna says, whether you have all material attachments, no material attachments, or whether you desire mukti, if you approach Krishna, gradually you will become purified and attain the purest, highest state of consciousness.
Krishna also says there are four types of people that approach him. One are those who are in distress, who simply want God to relieve their distress. That's material. Another is a person who's in poverty, who prays to God, please take me out of poverty. That is also material. Another is a person who is simply inquisitive to understand what is this God consciousness, what is the goal of life. And another is a person who is sincerely dedicated to understanding the absolute truth and realizing. But Krishna says, of these four types of people, all of them will gradually come to the platform of seriously striving to surrender to the absolute truth in due course of time, because they are on the right path. Simply by approaching Krishna and remembering him, whatever your motive is, you will gradually become purified. They were the best demons. The other demons, they were sent by Kamsa. But at the time of their death, they were in the presence of Krishna. Therefore, they were obviously thinking of Krishna. They were right in his presence. And whenever Krishna personally kills someone, that person gets mukti or liberation. So they were not on the same level of intense concentration on Krishna, but they also were awarded mukti simply by the blessing of being killed by the hand of Krishna. It's better to try to make them devotees than try to give them to... Because you see, Shishupal and Kamsa, they suffered like anything up until the point they got mukti. Right? So these people, yes, if they're envious of Krishna, they're gradually getting purified by thinking of Krishna. But at the same time, they're going to suffer like anything due to that envy. And it may be because Krishna's not going to personally come and kill them, because they're not very significant. They're not going to get instant mukti. And because there's no way they could be quite as envious as Shishupal and Kamsa, they're just a little envious in comparison. Therefore, they may have to take many, 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 many births of their envy before they finally come to that point where they'll get purified and become devotees. You see, because Krishna is not coming to kill them, they will not get liberated simply being envious of Krishna. But they will get purified, and gradually they'll become devotees of Krishna. There was one devotee in New York City, not a devotee, he was a karmi. And he used to see the devotees chanting, and he hated them. He hated them, passionately hated them. And he used to beat them up whenever he'd see them, physically. He was a strong person. He used to harass the devotees, he used to push them down, he used to punch them. Devotees, when they'd see him, they'd be very much cautious. He did this many, many times. Later on, he became the temple president of the New York temple. And he became a sannyasi. I asked him, because I was told a story that this person used to beat up devotees. I said, well, how did you change? He said, I don't know. I just hated the devotees. I hated the way they looked. I hated their shaved heads. I hated their robes. I thought they were just crazy. I hated their chanting. I hated everything about them. And I just, every time I'd see them, I just had to punch them. And after I did that so many times, I just, all of a sudden, I started thinking, these people are really the nicest people around. I punch them and they don't even do anything. The first thing he did before he joined is he stood guard
when the Harinam would be going, first he would come and start punching the devotees and hitting the devotees, and then one day somebody else came and started harassing the devotees, and he came and punched that guy and protected the devotees. The devotees would say, "My God, why you did that?" He said, "I don't know why I did it. I don't know, something about..." So gradually, from hitting the devotees, he became the protector of the devotees, and then he became the president of all the devotees. It's a true story. So when you're doing, when you're chanting in the streets of New York, literally tens and thousands of people walk by every day, right? And they just walk by and they say, "Ah, very nice, Hari Bol," or "Hare Krishna." Yeah, so many people just say nice words. They get a little purified. Of all the people in New York, he was the worst. Tens and thousands of people walking by, some say something good, some say something bad, some give a little donation, but he hated to the point where he couldn't walk by without punching. So of all the tens and thousands, he was the one that became a devotee. Not everyone else that said, "Oh, so nice." They will eventually. Because for those who are envious and blasphemous, there's nothing you can do to help them. It's just internal purification that Krishna will internally purify them gradually, but usually through the process of great suffering. But if they are not listening to your words, then it is better to preach to someone who is receptive and submissive. It's actually an offense to the holy name to try to preach the glories of the Lord to a faithless person. So you cannot preach to such persons. You just have to let the purifying sound of Krishna's name gradually make them suffer and get them purified. Huh? It's like a disease. Once you contract the disease of remembering Krishna once, you can't get it out of your system. In due course of time, it kills your material life. What does it mean, kills your material life? It means it kills your material conceptions of life. It doesn't mean you will lose everything necessarily. It means you will lose all your attachments in due course of time, which is the greatest benediction. Anyone else have any questions? We have to stop. Hare Krishna.